Thank you for your willingness to participate in this study. Before we begin, there are just a few things I want to quickly have a chat about. As I told you, the interview is going to be recorded for quality purposes and for you to review your answers to the questions at a later stage so I can capture them and write my case studies as accurately as possible. Your participation in the study is on a completely voluntary basis, and if you feel you want to withdraw from it, there will be no consequence to your withdrawal. The interview is confidential in the sense that no form of information will be elicited which can be linked to you directly or that someone external can use to make a link to you as a person or to the farmer. So, please think carefully about every question I'm going to ask you, and please be as honest as possible in giving your answers. If you have any questions or if there's anything that's not clear, please direct my attention to it so I can address it and explain and you can get good answers. Okay. The first section is just general information about the farm. What is the annual budget for training in the veterans? If you don't know, there's a background information form that I need to hand out. We can go back to questions at a later stage.
Yeah, I don't know. There's no fixed budget at this stage. Okay, so I don't know.
How many training or development programs are there in place? Like, separable?
Most of our training is outsourced. So whenever courses become available, we send guys who we think need the training or would benefit from it. So it varies quite a bit. This year we probably spent in total of 15 guys on some sort of course. And then the internal training is quite difficult to quantify. So this is sort of on the ground training.
How many permanent employees do you have at this stage?
With 36 permanent 5 days a week, and then about another 20 who are 4 days a week when we need them, but which is basically it's been all year, but they've got the option of having 1 day off, which is mainly the women, because it's just the day to do all the house, the tasks at home, the washing, and etc.
The second section of this interview is regarding the perception of individual variables which impact on training and development. These are variables inherent to the employees, to the individual employee, which would impact their success in some other way, or could, not me. The first topic is the individual's capacity to learn and develop. Are employees assessed in terms of their... Sorry, I need to go over the board werknemers beoordeel in termen van hun gereedheid voor opleiding?
Oordeel is...
Are employees assessed beforehand to determine what they're ready for training?
Yeah, our assessments, so we about to start doing it now, individual assessments of throughout the year, sort of of how we thought they're fed during the year. And before a set train or whatever, we don't sort of go and test guys to see if they are able. Normally people who've identified who are able to do a specific task, and the training will just better them at the task that they do. For example, if you put a guy on a forklift and you see he's able to operate it, you send him on a forklift course, and then when he's able to do that, you put him with the bigger machinery. That's how we sort of do it. You don't try and turn the more specific strong points in a person and say, you're good at this and this and this, therefore you will be good at that. That's just sort of on the job. You pick up the guy's skills and try and improve them so that he's basically so he can do the job assigns it to the best of his ability.
This links to the previous question as well. The first question was regarding learner readiness. The second one is regarding learning potential. Do you assess, I expect quite the same answer actually, but do you assess learning potential among employees coming into the workplace? And
what
way do you do this?
We do identify those who we feel have got a higher learning potential. The first obvious step is obviously the school records, either how far they went in education or how well they did while at school. And then the second part is just by picking up an on the job. If they've got a willingness to learn or learn quickly, you give them a task, you know, to explain it a few times and pick it up the first time or able to perform it.
Next question is on cognitive engagement. What steps are taken to try to ensure that employees are cognitively engaged in training? If I can explain that or expand on that, how do you ensure that they actually make a cognitive effort?
Yeah. No, there's no real way.
Subsection of this is motivation to engage in training and development. In terms of personal needs, are employees made aware of the potential benefits of training in their own personal lives?
At the moment it is, especially with all the frequent activities that are going on. We've got the Department of Health, course going where they're trying to train people just better hygiene in-house and care around in the home. Tomorrow morning we've actually got one of the ladies that was doing a quick talk on what the modules she's been given, and she has to an assignment is to speak to people about this. So tomorrow morning, for about half an hour, she says she needs to speak to the guys. And I'm not sure what it's going to be about.
If I can elaborate on that, thinking in terms of the possible basic, if I can explain it, like, how do you actually communicate to employees that what the skills they learn at work can have an impact in their personal lives in terms of security or improvement in their livelihood or
improved ways because they probably not directly, you know, wouldn't say you learn this course and this will make you, if you're good at it, you'll get a better job and a better income. No, we don't.
Okay. Okay, the next question is on job involvement and interest in the subject, obviously the subject of training. Do you think that the extent of job involvement that your employees experience could have an impact on how well they perform in training?
Yes. So obviously, if you're involved in your job and you enjoy it, then when training comes around, you'd want to do it. You want to take the most out of the training that you can because you enjoy it. So I think if people are involved in their job and enjoy doing their job, they will get more out of it. And if they're just going to training, it needs to be done. So specify the specific training to someone who at least strong points of skill what he enjoys, rather than just saying you go and do that because somebody needs to have it done.
And the next is on expectancy and skills and skills development. How is the utility of training and development communicated to employees in terms of its practical or future value? By utility, we look at the application and the potential value to either the employee or the organization.
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it gets explained.
How are the possible consequences of training and development communicated to employees?
I don't think it's done formally. I think it's more if there's a training session comes up, we'll get the guys together and say, because you spray operator, you need to know this stuff for your own safety and to do the job better. We don't do a general talk on training and start looking for skills.
Okay. Next section is on attitudes to training and development. And the first question is regarding resistance to change. Have you ever experienced on this farm resistance to training and development from employees?
No. I mean, one day enjoy it because it's something different, and today of almost paid leave, I would say. But then I do think they enjoy it because it's a change from the everyday job and just listening to someone else for a change.
Okay. Then the next question is on skepticism. How would you describe the general attitude of your employees to training and development in
what kind of this?
The next section is on personality and specifically the impact of locus of control. Your locus of control is your perceived control over the consequences of your own actions. So, person with an internal locus of control would consider that what happens in his life is more within his own controllable. Someone with an external locus of control perceives that control to lie with someone else. Do you think that employees in general accept the responsibilities for their actions in general?
No, it's always someone else's fault, or an error or a mistake. There's always a story behind it.
And what happens? Do you think that this can have an impact on their performance in training and development?
I think a lot of the training and development is trying to change that mindset, just to give the people a sense of responsibility in all aspects of life. I can't comment on specific training, but a lot of the training that we do is to change that mindset, where they are responsible for their lives and their actions.
The last question on the employee or the individual variable, it's on the perceived capacity to learn and develop. The first question is on self-efficacy, actually your belief in your own capacity to be successful at something you attempt. How are the basic goals of training and development communicated to employees? In other words, are measurable targets actually set for the employees against which they can measure either success or failure?
No. Okay. The training happens and then we hope that the skills will be learned. But there's no state measure.
Okay, and then back to the first part, do you communicate any specific goals that need to be reached? Mm-hmm. Right.
Sorry, I didn't answer that good.
Our training, our employees assessed in terms of specific goals that are reached, and are they given feedback and support in trying to achieve these goals?
No, there's no formal structure in what the hope is achieved and what is achieved. There's no goals or targets.
The next section next part is on learned helplessness. Basically, this is learned helplessness in the concept that due to conditioning and various environmental factors, a person can become so trapped in the conceptualization of their life as unimprovable almost, and they feel that they are unable to do anything to improve their own quality of life in any way. Not that it's not a reality, but it's a perception and a belief. Can you think of examples where employees who basically have the capacity or have the potential to perform well on training in the development have failed in it as a result of this belief in, or this lack of belief in their own capacity to perform?
No, I can't think of a specific instance, but I do think there is definitely an issue where if the self-belief was better, the people would gain more out of any type of training. But that's what with the social work that we've got there is the belief that we're trying to change.
Okay. You mentioned your social worker, basically it links to the next question. How are these issues addressed when you do observe them?
The social workers go from family to family, person to person, basically, just talking to them about issues in their lives and what they feel is expected from them at work and how they feel that they are treated at work. And just trying to make them feel more important about themselves.
Alright, next section, the perception of organizational variables that affect training and development in the workplace. The first part of this is the farm strategy and a specific link to training and development. And the first part of this is about a description of your training and development strategy. Obviously, strategy implies something formal. It doesn't have to be formal, but in any training planning exercise, you do go through a few phases, generally, even if it's on an informal level. Could you please explain to me how the training and development strategy on this farm is developed, or can you please explain the strategy to me based on the following phases specifically? The first is the strategic and other goals of training and development.
Okay, I'll try and answer your question we don't have a set strategy, but we do have a goal in mind where we realize that with the country that we're in and the supply of labor, we want to build a core people, permanent people that live on the farm that are all skilled or semi-skilled at doing all the tasks of farming, so driving tractors, lorries, being able to fix machines, sort of skills and mechanical skills, irrigation, kind of fertilizing, running a group of people who have all of those types of skills, and then all other work is going to be outsourced with seasonal labor. So what that our goal is to reach this group of people who have a responsible and are skilled or seem skilled at doing all the basic tasks of agriculture.
Okay. Do you perform training needs analysis?
Sorry?
Training needs analysis. That's where you determine your current or future needs for specific training.
No.
How do you go about formulating your strategy?
It's all been in the mind at this stage. We haven't, as I said, there's no formal strategy. It's just ideas that we have talked about as mentioned.
And how do you go about implementing the strategy of yours?
The strategy's not there yet, so we need to set up a strategy to be able to implement it. And at this stage, we're just trying to identify people who we see that will fit into what we want to achieve, and those who don't, we need to sort of get rid of.
And how do you evaluate whether, how would you evaluate whether your strategy has been successful or not?
I think at the end it will be just to see how much responsibility you can hand over to a person, say, we need this land plowed in this way, and then he goes and does the task about you having to look up. So you're going to check up on them the whole time. And another way which you see are two in one is people who have a sense of responsibility and a pride in what they do, but also their homes would be a better place where there will be no domestic violence or things drinking over the weekend. It will be a more happy community.
Right, the next section is on labor relations, and specifically on your perception as employer of labor relations on this farm. How would you describe the nature of labor relations on the farm at this stage?
I think it's quite good. There's obviously the different management or different personnel is different. Some people expect more, and from the neighbours and others, and then if the goals are not reached, there is anger, and the other parts there is understanding and trying to just get the self-confidence up. I think in general it's quite good teamwork.
Okay. Can you please describe the normal communication process between management and neighbours?
We sit together in the mornings every morning, and we sort of send people in different directions on the tasks that need to be done. And then once a week, management meets with the foreman to talk about what has happened and what's happened in the week that's passed and what we plan to do in the coming week.
Okay. And communication. Bottom-up communication, basically communication from the workers to management.
There's not much.
Do you think that there's mutual trust between management and the employees?
Not complete trust.
Please explain why you feel that way.
I feel that there's often a mistrust between the management and the workers, that the task not going to be done to their expectations, and then the other way around is the the worker would not understand the task completely, but wouldn't ask, and then not do it the way it was meant to be done, and therefore friction happens. That's it.
Do you think that the nature of labor relations here could affect the effectiveness of training? And if you do, how would you describe this effect?
I don't think so, because training is done by other people. All formal training is done by outsourced to professionals.
The next part is on organizational culture. Do you think it is important to continuously develop to continuously invest in skills development of employees? And could you please explain why you feel this way?
Yes. Because the upskilling of people, you can only gain, there can only be benefits in the workplace. If someone's not as good at doing something, he's going to do the task better, and also then become more confident in his ability to do tasks, which is obviously a snowball effect.
Right. Do you think that continuous training and development forms part of the value system of this staff?
Yeah.
Okay. How is this communicated to employees?
That's probably it might be sort of talked about with the foreman, but not directly to the employee.
The next section is on the organizational climate. Can you please can you please explain what measure of support is given by the following stakeholders during training and development? Support from management or supervisors?
Is this sort of while the training is going on?
Yeah. During the course of training, and by support, I mean, this can be from advice to encouragement to lending assistance with difficult problems.
This normally happens at a different location.
Okay. Then the support from peers or
colleagues, not part of the on present when the training occurs.
And then your perception on the support from instructors?
I don't know who it is. Not present.
Do you think that labor relations on this farm has an effect on the climate in training and development, specifically thinking about the support and the general environment in which they work? Do you think that could have an effect on the climate within which that needs to happen?
Yes. I mean, if someone knows that the employee is sending them because they want them to improve and believe they can, they'll do their best to improve this. I think if they get sent, thinking that they're doing things for the sake of it, then they've got no real desire to want to learn.
And then the next is on your organizational systems. Your approach to training and development specifically, which of the following methods do you use on the farm? Training methods and please motivate why it is used or why not. On the job training?
Yes. It's probably the most training we do, and the easiest way to teach someone something is by letting them do it and guiding them along the way.
Office job training. It doesn't need to be by an external provider, but something almost like a classroom setup.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, we do, and it's we use external people because often you need they need to be certified in what they get, especially when it comes to first aid and offer to forklift or whatever. So in order to achieve our certification, we need our employees to be certified in the skills that they do.
Okay. Coaching?
Coaching.
Mentoring, active encouragement.
I think it goes hand in hand with on the job training. So if you want to teach someone to do something, try your best that you feel comfortable in doing the task.
Then formal instruction, this is, do you send your employees to do more formal instruction now, not just general certifications, but more in terms of diplomas or after school studies at all?
We don't send to university or college or anything. One of the children is at university now, but that's on his own. He got interested and what he wants to do, but no, nothing specifically for on the job.
And then informal instruction, that's basically all. This is everything up to official or recognized.
So obviously law says you have to change to school I think it's grade 9 or something. And we do encourage that the kids stay at school for as long as possible, which is getting tricked. That's the least.
Okay. Do you make use of multimedia tools when you present training?
No.
On pod?
No.
Do you make use of any additional methods for training and development that haven't been mentioned?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. The next part is on the conditioning of learning. Is there any recognition or reward system in place for employees who are successful in training and development? This can be formal or informal, and it can be as big as salary increases or as small as just congratulations by management.
Yeah, there is a congratulations. It's very informal. And then once we see that they have learned the skills and they are now practicing the skills they use, then we do have a rating system for their wage, and they would go up into a new rating system which would indirectly increase their wage.
Are employees actively encouraged to apply their new skills at work?
Not actively, no. What we would do is if someone has been to a course, say, for chainsaw, we would give them the responsibility to use the chainsaw when required.
Are correct or incorrect applications of the content of training and development recognized and basically pointed out at work?
We don't really see the context, the content. It's normally done off of a different location. So, no.
Okay. Then there are a few interrelationships between the variables that I just want to touch on in the next section. Do you think that employees, the readiness of employees to engage in training could affect their motivation to learn? And how...
The readiness of?
Learner readiness. In other words, we look at the skills they've built up to a certain point and whether that has equipped them sufficiently to proceed to the next level of training, if you will.
It's quite difficult to gauge if on the readiness. We identify people who we think are able to excel at that task and then they send them to training. So it's difficult to weigh the readiness. Because I think before we do send someone, we don't send someone on a course completely blind. They would have done it or had on field or on sort of in-house training before, and then if we feel that they are good, are good at the job, we'll send them to formal training.
Then, do you think that employees' perceived measure of control over their own success in training could affect their motivation to learn? Back in it with the locus of control now.
Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
I think they do see that the guys who have more responsible jobs do get a better wage, and if they get themselves up there, they'll it'll benefit themselves.
Okay. Do you think that employees perceived capacity to learn and develop their skills affect their motivation to learn? This is their perception of their own capacity. Regarding self-efficacy
or learn helplessness. Yes, I think so. If someone doesn't think he's able to do a task, he's not going to try and learn because he's just gone in with a negative mindset. But to learn, you need to know that you are able to do what you are learning to do.
Do you think that employees' perception of their capacity to change the circumstances at work would affect their motivation to learn?
What circumstances would that be?
Basically, your work environment. If I can use an example here, someone who goes on training, like you said now, to operate a forklift, that's going to result in a different work environment or an adaptive work environment. Do you think that employees who perceive the opportunity for them to do that would be more motivated?
I don't think it would be a big factor, because even though they do part of their work in a head environment, there's nothing from stopping them to do, if need be, doing the bottom work at the same time. They would probably be getting a better wage, but because they are able to do their jobs, that if need be, they will be doing the task that the lower paid people do.
Okay. Then additional organizational variables that affect motivation to learn. Do you think that the support that employees are given by the following stakeholders could affect their motivation to learn? And how do you describe this effect? And that is, again, support given by supervisors or management?
Supervisor management is the rule. If they supported people people become more confident and believe they can do it, they can do a job that they previously didn't think they could do.
Colleagues, peers?
Also, peer pressure is quite a big factor, and I think it's often more negative than positive. So if they see someone is moving above them, they'll do their best to get the skill level again.
Do you mean get the skills level again by putting the other
person down? Putting the other person down.
Not improving.
Not encouraging understanding the person to do.
And then by instructors?
Instructors, I can only imagine, I haven't been to any of the trainings, I can only imagine that instructors, it's their job to get people to believe that they can do certain tasks. I don't know, this person shouldn't be instructed if he's trying to sort of spread the sense of confidence.
Very true. Do you think that the recognition and conditioning that employees receive during training and development affects their motivation to learn? So the recognition for success and the encouragement from management during training and development, do you think that this affects their motivation to learn?
I don't think there is enough sort of emphasis on what could be achieved if they sell it more. The management needs it up to the employer themselves to take the most of the opportunity.
Do you think that employees' general motivation to learn could affect their attitude to training and development?
If someone doesn't want to learn, you can sit through a training course and not take anything in. But if you've got a willingness to learn, it's always an opportunity.
Alright, and then last to homesick. How do you think employees' locus of control could affect their perceived capacity to learn and develop?
I think it's got a big factor. If you don't really care, or you don't believe in yourself, or have any sense of responsibility, you're not going to think that you can learn, and you just think the situation that you're in is the one that you've got to deal with for the rest of your life, and therefore don't take much out of the training you receive, because you don't believe in yourself that it's going to benefit you in your life at all.
Okay. And then the last one, can you please provide me with just an overview of all the various or all the different skills development, but specifically also or skills development and developmental initiatives? For example, I'm aware of Driekontein. Can you just give me an overview of how all these, or basically in separate packages, how each of these initiatives work on the farm?
Okay.
So, longer.
Driekontein is obviously, you know the story behind the company and how the company and how it generates its income. And the idea is to get a group of people who are farm laborers and work hard on the farm, but have a lot more than just being, having more than just what normal farm laborers have there. After work, then we have this sort of stream of a happy community where over weekends it's quiet, people enjoy a drink or two and go and watch the team play sports and have activities in the community center where everyone's involved and the kids are all sent to school and possibly university afterwards. And it's just, it's making people who, since giving people the opportunity to live a better life who previously didn't have the chance. And through the more formal work training, it's basically our goal is to have a permanent workforce who is either staying in school or skilled at the task of agriculture. And that obviously has benefits to the farm, where it's just a lot easier to run a business when you know you're sending someone on a task and you're going to do it properly the first time. It frees up a lot of management time. And through people who train up and become skilled, we believe that the people who are willing and able to learn are also the people who are going to have more respect for themselves and their neighbours outside work in the community.
All right. That's it.
Right.